Good morning. Today's Daf Yuma Daf Mem Beis. We are on Mem Alef Amud Beis. We're starting with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is continuing with the selection process of the Seir Lazazel. There are going to be two goats placed in front of the Kohen Gadol. Remember, the Skan is standing to his right, and the Rosh Beis Av is standing to his left, and two goats are standing also to his right and to his left. And the lottery, and he puts his hand into the box, and he's going to take out two lottery tickets. One's going to say Lashem, the other one's going to say Lazazel, and whichever lottery ticket comes on his right hand is going to go on the one on the right, and whichever falls on the left is going to go on the one on the left. We've been discussing since the beginning of the Perek the selection process. Yesterday's daf talked about how essential daf mem and daf mem aleph talked about how essential this part of this component of the Avodas Yom Kippurim is. The Gemara's conclusion is it's ma'akid, it's absolutely essential, it's an integral part. Yesterday the Gemara then took a little bit of a detour in terms of discussing at what point in time you designate the chatas and the ola oaf. When you buy a pair of birds and you offer them as an obligation, so at what point in time do you assign which one's the chatas, which one's the ola? So the Gemara yesterday in Daf Mem Alef detoured and took us through a statement by Rav Chisda and an explanation of and a defense of Rav Chisda's statement in light of everything that we've been talking about in the course of our parak. We're back to the Mishnah, and we're back to the process of selection. So now we've identified, we're at the point now where the Kohen actually picked up the lottery, held his hand up, you know, whichever is the quote-unquote winner, although I don't know, winner-loser is not really the right term to use in this context, but whichever one is Lashem has been assigned, and which one's Lashem is assigned, Lazazel is assigned, and the Mishnah continues. Kasha Lashon Shalzaharis Beroshir HaMishtaleach. You tie the red wool on the head of the Seir HaMishtaleach, meaning there are, right between the horns of the Seir HaMishtaleach, you're going to place a piece of red wool. Ve'emita keneged be'shiluchal, and you point it in its direction. What direction is it pointing it to? The exit, meaning it's going to be sent out of the Azara later in the day. It's going to be sent over a cliff later in the day that is a bit of a walk outside of the base of Mikdash, so you point it in the direction. And as far as one who's going to get shechted, meaning the Seir Lashem, so lib keneged be'shchita, so opposite the be'shchita. What exactly does this part of the Mishnah mean? So it's not clear. Meaning from the Mishnah itself, it's not exactly clear what we're doing with the Seir Lashem. Is it just simply mean we're positioning it? We're positioning it in the direction where it's going to go. It's going to go and get shechted, or maybe no. Maybe what the Mishnah means is that we're going to tie a red piece of wool around the base hashchita of the Seir Lashem. So it's not clear. The Gemara is going to clarify, and when we get to the Gemara, we're going to see exactly what the Mishnah means by this line. Balo Eitzel Paro Shnia. Okay, so now the selection process is done. So now we're up to the next part of the Avoda, and that is the second Vidui. We already saw that he does Vidui, he does confession on his part. The par, there are two Chatzis Karbonos Rabon Yom Kippur. One is Paro, actually. There may be a third, but we'll talk about that later in the Masechta. But the par that he brings, the Paroshel Kohen, Paroshel Kohen Gadol, he already did Vidui on it once. And he confessed to his sins and the sins of his family, his own family. And then he's now coming back for a second Vidui on the par. He puts his two hands on the par and he does Vidui, V'kachaya Omer. And this is what he says, Ana Hashem. And the Nusach HaVidui will not change except for one detail, and that, of course, is who is he confessing on behalf of? Chatasi Avisi Pashati, again, the order in which he announces the sins, whether he goes from smaller to greater, greater to smaller. So you'll notice that in the Mishnah, those words are in parentheses, because there are two different nuschos, there are two different texts of the Mishnah. Okay, go back to the Gemara that we did earlier, where we referenced this machlokas. Lefanecha ani uvesi uvnei Aaron am kadeshecha ana Hashem. And here's the big change. Ani uvesi uvnei Aharon. This confession is going over the entire population of Kohanim. Am kadeshecha ana Hashem kapenal avanos lepashayim lechatam shavisu shabashati vishachatat lefanecha ani uvesi uvnei Aaron am kadeshecha kakasir b'sas Moshe avdech im ki biyamazeh yichaper lechem letarazchem mikol chatoseichem lefnei Hashem titaru. Okay, so, but the nusach of the vidui over here, except with the exception of who we're saying it on behalf of, is essentially the same as we saw in the previous Mishnah. And as we discussed earlier as well, he said Shem Hashem, he said Shem HaMefarash, so the response is Baruch Shem Kavod, Machzor Le'olam Ve'ed. Okay. Ibailu. Okay, so what do we have to clarify in the Mishnah? So the as we pointed out when we learned the Mishnah, the part that needs clarification is what exactly are we doing with the Sir LaHashem? So the Gemara asks exactly this question. Ulanishchad akshirakai o hamadakai. When we say, and we're going to do this to the Sir LaHashem, what's this? What are we talking about? So the Gemara offers two possible explanations. One is that it's talking about kshira. It means like this. You see the goat that's Sir Mishtaleach, you need to tie red wool around its head to indicate that's a Sir Mishtaleach. And when you get to the Sir LaHashem, you need to tie red wool around its neck because we're going to shecht it. That's one possibility of what the Mishnah means. Oh, Hamadakai. Or no, maybe just Hamada. Meaning just like we point the Sir Mishtaleach in the direction of the exit, we're going to point the Sir LaHashem in the direction of the Beis HaShechita, where we're going to end up shechting it, which is going to be somewhere north of the Mizbeach. Maybe a little bit to the west of the Mizbeach, but somewhere north of the Mizbeach. So, Ahamadakai. So, Tashma Dini Rav Yosef. So the Gemara says, well, Rav Yosef has a Braisa. Based on Rav Yosef's Braisa, it will be clear what the correct way to understand the Mishnah is. Keshel Lashon Shel Zahoris B'Roshir HaMishaleach Ve'emidu Kedege Beis Shiluchal. Tie red wool around the head of the Sir HaMishaleach and we face it in the direction of the exit. Ula nishcha kenege beis hashchita. And as far as the nishcha is concerned, the goat that's going to be shechted, we face it in the direction of the beis hashchita. Shelo yitariv zeh bezeh, velo yitariv ba'acherim. So that there will be no confusion. It won't be confused with each other, and it won't be confused with others. Adkan, that's the braisa. Now in terms of what the braisa does in terms of helps us, well, in terms of the actual line of Ula Nishcha Kenege Beis Shechita, so there's no help over there because that's exactly what our Mishnah said. Where the help comes from in this Braisa is the end of the Braisa. What does the Braisa say? It avoids confusion. You won't confuse these two goats one with another anymore because of the red wool, and you won't confuse these goats with any other goats. Now, I don't know what other goats are doing at right now in the Azara, Yom Kippur. Okay, maybe other Karbanos of Yom Kippur, maybe some of the Musafim of Yom Kippur, but Iyamad Bishlam Akshira Kai Shapir. Now, if the Kshira is what we're doing to the Nishchat, meaning that we're tying red wool, so then I totally understand the Braisa, because essentially what the Braisa is saying is, look, here, tie red wool around the horns of the, around the head of the Sir Mishtalech, tie red wool around the neck of the Sir LaHashem, and now there will be zero confusion. I won't confuse them with one another, because one's on the head and one's around the neck, and I won't confuse it with any other goats in the Azara. So then, it makes perfect sense. But, Ela'iya Amart, Amadakai, but if we're just talking about pointing the Nishkan in the correct direction, but I'm not putting red wool around the neck of the Nishkat, Nihide Bechaver Lama Arev Dahai Katerbe Vahai Lo Katerbe. Granted, I won't confuse these goats with each other anymore. Because one's tied with red wool, and what is it? But, Be'achrini Mias Ma'arev. But I will confuse it with other goats, meaning if it has no red wool tied around it, so, and it just kind of runs away into another herd of, or small herd of goats, or not even a herd, but if it just runs away and it stands next to another goat, that's it, I'm going to lose it. So, Elalav Shmamina, Akshira Kai, Shmamina. So the Gemara says it must be talking about the Kshira, that we're tying red wool around both the head of the Sir Mishaleach and around the neck of the Sir LaHashem. Adkan. Okay, and with that now, with that Braisa of Rav Yosef, now we go back to our Mishnah, and we've solidified our Pshat in the Mishnah. Our Pshat in the Mishnah is that we're going to tie red wool around the head of the Sir HaMashalech and around the neck of the goat. It's interesting. I saw notes discuss this. The Rambam, when he speaks about the tying of the red wool, the Rambam does not make any mention in the Avodas Yom HaKippurim about tying red wool around the neck of the Nishkat. Meaning he doesn't learn the Mishnah like we just concluded. Even the Gemara here ends the whole discussion with, and we just concluded that this is the right shot. I saw that that's a bit of a discussion. Why the Rambam doesn't work with our conclusion that we just arrived at. Rav Yitzchak says, okay, let's talk about red wool, and that will be a good part of today's daf. Today's daf will be red wool talk. Okay, the Torah demands the red wool under a number of circumstances, under a couple of circumstances. Let me not go overboard over here. A couple of circumstances, the Torah demands red wool. The Torah demands red wool by the Paraduma. Paraduma, the Torah says that you're going to take eitz eres, you're going to take cedar wood, and azov, which translates into English as hyssop, whatever that may be, some herb. And somebody told me oregano, but okay. And the I don't know if that's right. And the I'm sorry, Shnei Tolas and red wool. And what do we do with those three components in the Parah Aduma? We throw it el toch sreifas haparah. We throw it into the fire as we're burning the Parah Aduma. Okay, so that's one area in the Torah where the Torah demands a red wool. Another place in the Torah where the Torah demands red wool, and that's the by Mitzora. By the Taharas HaMitzora, so part of the Tahara process is also going to require red wool. See the beginning of Parshas Mitzora for a description there of exactly where it is. And where else is red wool used? Right here on Yom Kippur. Although the Torah doesn't actually tell us to use red wool, but there's a Lashon Shel Zoharis. There's red wool described in conjunction in relationship to the Seir HaMashleach. So really we could point to three areas where red wool is required. So Rav Yitzchak here is going to make a statement that really goes on two of those three. I'm Rav Yitzchak, Shtei Lashon HaShamati, Achash HaPar V'Achash Shel Seir HaMashleach. I heard of two times where there's a requirement of red wool. One's by the Parah Aduma, the other's by the Seir HaMashleach. Achas Tzricha Shir V'Achas Eina Tzricha Shir. One requires a shear, one requires an amount, and the other one does not require an amount. Meaning there's no minimum amount. And here's my only problem. I know one has a shear and one doesn't have a shear. I just don't know which one's which. I'm Rav Yosef Nechze Anan. So Rav Yosef says, okay, so let's think about it. Let's figure it out. Shel Seir Mishlech Zabai Chaluka Bai Shear, Vishal Parad Labai Chaluka Labai Shear. So Rav Yosef constructs the following argument. Well, by the Parah Aduma, the red wool, yes, it's necessary. But at no point in time do I have to divide the red wool, meaning I just simply need a tuft of red wool. Fine, so there's no shear by the red wool of the Parah Aduma. But when it comes to Seir HaMashleach, here's what's going to happen. We're going to get to the cliff. We're going to take a portion of the red wool, and we're going to tie it to the rock right next to the cliff. So that when the Parah Aduma is thrown overboard, over the cliff, so some of the red wool is still tied to the horn, and some of the red wool is tied to a rock alongside. And the benefit of doing that is so that if and when the red wool turns into white, which as we described happened for the first 40 years of the second Beis HaMikdash, and after that sometimes didn't, sometimes didn't, so we're going to be able to see whether or not the red turns into white. So we have to divide the red wool. So the Gemara's argument now is, since there's a necessity to divide the red wool, so therefore it requires a shear. There has to be a minimum amount. Otherwise, how am I going to divide? Maskova Rami Barchama de Paranami by COVID. So Rami Barchama says, you know, I can make an argument going the other way. But that by the Parah Aduma there has to be a shear. Why? Because I need weight. Why do I need weight? Because what's going to happen is that I have a fire. The fire's burning the ashes, The fire's burning the Parah Aduma. And into that fire, what are we throwing? We're throwing in the cedar wood and the azov. And we're throwing in the Shnei Talas, and we're throwing in the red wool. Now, if the red wool could just simply be a little piece of red wool, a small tuft, that has no weight, well, that fire is burning, the fire creates heat, heat rises, and that red wool is not going to go down into the fire. So maybe the argument you can construct is just the opposite, that maybe there's a shear requirement by the red wool going into the fire, because the red wool has to go into the fire. The Torah says, El toch sreifa sapara. So Amalei Rava, Kovet Tanahi. So Rava says, yes, there are those who require that the red wool for the Parah Aduma has to have weight, but that's a machlokas tanaim. Not everyone agrees to that. Or deparlo by chaluka. So the Gemara says, now hold on one second. The Parah Aduma does not require a division, meaning the argument that we constructed to begin with was that by the Seir HaMashleach, the red wool has to be divided, and that's why it needs a shear. I don't know, we could also make a similar argument by the Parah Aduma. The Gemara says, so the Gemara says that what we do is we take these three ingredients, the Azov, the Eitz Erez, and the Shnei Talas, and we bundle them together. Well, how do you bundle them together? What material do I use to tie them together? I use the Shnei Talas, I use the red wool. So one can make an argument that the red wool has to have a shear for the Parah Aduma, one to be part of the bundle, and one to actually create the bundle, to tie it together. So if your whole argument is chalukah, well, you can make the same argument by Parah Aduma. So the Gemara says, Ema b'zanav lashon. So the Gemara says, well, no, maybe what we meant over there is zanav lashon. Zanav lashon means the tail of the red wool. Meaning, as Rashi explains, look, You're going to have red wool. It's going to be a tuft of red wool, and it's going to have some fringes. So maybe that red wool could be both. It could be both part of the bundle, and those little loose hanging fringes at the end could be used to tie the bundle together. So I don't know if you have to say that there's any chalukah necessary by the red wool of the paraduma. Masha'inkin, when it comes to Sira Mashaleach, there has to be an actual division of the red wool. Because some of it's going to be left on the head of the animal, and some of it's going to be tied on a rock nearby. So since there's a chalukah division by the red wool of the Sira Mashaleach, there the argument is strong. There has to be a minimum amount. But when it comes to the paraduma, the argument is not as strong. I'm Rabbi Chanina, I'm a Rav, Eitz Ereshni Tolasha, Sheklas Hasan, Shal Hevitz Ksheira. Okay, as long as we discussed the wool of the red wool, the paraduma going into the fire, so let's envision. Okay, we have a fire burning, the animals, the cow is being burnt, and the Torah tells us that we have to throw in three ingredients. We have to throw in Eitz Erez, Ezov, and Shni Tolas. Now, as the red wool is coming in, let's say it's wool, it's light, it's inflammatory. Let's say it burns up before it actually gets into the fire. So the Gemara quotes a statement in the name of Rav, which is, that's fine. It's kosher. Meaning you successfully fulfill the mitzvah of throwing the red wool into the fire, even though it didn't go into the fire. Maybe the Gemara challenges based on a braisa, nishavhav halashon, mevi lashon achira mekadesh. So if the Lashon literally means tongue, but in our context it means the tuft of red wool. If it burns up, meaning before it enters actually into the fire, so what do? You get a new one. Now, Mikadesh. Mikadesh, Rashi says, it doesn't mean you sanctify it. There's no sanctification purpose over here. Mikadesh just simply means you place it into the fire. Rashi simply says, and when it comes to Paraduma, that word Kiddush comes up again and again, and it's just simply a verb describing you put it in. Mikadesh. I'm a rabbi, so what's the problem? The problem is very straightforward. Meaning Rav says that if it burns while still in the air, the flame burns it, so that's fine. Meanwhile, the Braisa says it's not fine. But the Braisa says if it burns in the air while coming into the fire but didn't go into the fire, you got to get a replacement. So we have a contradiction between Rav and a Braisa. Now, you could say that Rav is just simply arguing with the Braisa. The Gemara has handled that in that manner before. But I'm a rabbi, lo kasha, but rabbi gives an easier way to answer it. One that will basically strike a difference between Rav and the Braisa. Kan bekolachas, kan benichfafas. It depends on what kind of fire we're talking about. If we're talking about like a high fire, right, Rashi describes one that's going high in the air, and what happens now is that I throw the tuft of wool in, so it burns while still in midair, and it really didn't hit the base of the fire, that's no good. That's not considered el toch srefa sapara. But if the fire is a low fire, meaning it's not raging, it's hot, but it's a low fire, and it burns. It didn't go into the fire, but it burned as it approached the base of the fire, so that's fine. That's nechfafas, and that would be fine. That would be a satisfaction of the Torah's requirement of el toch, even though it didn't go actually into, but still that's considered enough of an el toch. Yeah, in other words, it's interesting. What comes out now is that there's no, the fire requirement is kind of loose, meaning, right, sometimes it could be big, sometimes it could be small, that's right. There doesn't seem to be any requirement. But in terms of the wall, you know, we're just going to react now to whether it's a high fire or a low fire. Okay. Right. Rava Amar Kovet Tanahi. So now, we made a statement before, there has to be weight to the tuft of red wool that's going into the paraduma. So the Gemara noted that's a machlokas tanaim. The Gemara didn't explain it. The Gemara just said it. And now the Gemara is going to go back and explain it or present it. So Rebbe's of the opinion, why do I bundle it all together? Because it needs to be bundled all together. Meaning that there's a requirement in the Torah. Now, truth of the matter is, if you look at the Pesukim are not super clear that they need to be bundled together, but according to Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, they do. They need to be bundled together. And that's why I need a strip of wool to not only be part of the bundle, but to bundle together like we just described a moment earlier. Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, Amar Kedesh Yeh Bem Kovod, V'yiplu L'toch Sreifa Saparat. No, I bundle together to give it weight. Meaning that if I threw in the three ingredients each on their own, tuft of wool is very light. Chances are it's not going to go into the fire. We just got finished learning that if it burns while still in midair, it's not good. So I bundle it together according to Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, so that it goes into the fire in order to give it weight. So you see that this, obviously Rebbe disagrees, Rebbe argues. So you see, whether or not there's a COVID requirement, there's a weight requirement, you see that's subject to a machlokas tanaim. Okay. Okay. People talk fine. Ki also Rav Dima Amar Rav Yochanan. Shalosh Lashono Shamati. Okay, now we get the three. Because as I introduced in the beginning of today's daf, there are not two times in the Torah where there is a red wool requirement. There are actually three. So why Rav Yitzchak's statement only dealt with two and not three? Okay, I don't know. Meaning maybe because he was just simply contrasting the shear versus no shear. Okay, unclear. Unclear why he only dealt with two. But when Rav Dima comes in from Eretz Yisrael, he quotes Rav Yochanan, and he says, three Lashono Shamati, Achash Shapar, Achash Shasnir Meshtech, Achash Shamatzara. So three times in the Torah requires us to use red wool. Achas Mishkal Asarazuz, V'achas Mishkal Shnei Salaim, V'achas Mishkal Shekel. So in terms of how much, so one is going to require a weight of 10 zuz. Remember, their coins back then were based on weight. So when you had a coin also reflected a particular weight. So one was Mishkal of Sarazuz, one was a Mishkal of two Salaim, and one was a Mishkal of one Shekel. Ve'ein li lefarish. But here's what I don't know. In other words, I know I have three areas in the Torah where wool is required. I have three measurements, but now it's time for match. And I don't know how to match them. Ki also Ravin, Pirsha, Mishmei Rabbi Yonasan. So Ravin comes in from Eretz Yisrael, right? You know how this always works. Meaning, you have Rav Dimi, usually like immediately after you're going to have Ravin. They're the two frequent flyers of the time of the Gemara. They went back and forth. They shuttled between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel all the time. And we find, as we learn the Bavli, which obviously comes from the perspective of Bavel, so we find all the time, Rav Dimi comes in and he says, here's what they're saying in Eretz Yisrael. Ravin comes in, he says, and they're obviously always quoting Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael. So Ravin says, here, I got the rest of the story, meaning I'll complete the picture. Top of Mem Beis Amud Aleph, Shalpara Mishkal Sarazuz. So when it comes to the Paraduma, it requires 10 zuz. That's the heaviest amount. Rashi says because it's a COVID requirement. Now granted that we just got finished learning that that's subject to a machlokas tanaim, but let's say that Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon's position over here is the one that's espoused. And therefore, when it comes to the tuft of wool for the Paraduma, there needs to be weight. It needs to go into the fire. So therefore, it has to be 10 zuz. V'she'el sirma hamishtaleach, Mishkal Shnei Salaim. Now, when it comes to the Sira Mishtaleach, so there, it has to be divided into two. So therefore, the weight requirement is the weight of two Salaim. So that when divided into two, so I'll have one Sela's worth being on the head of the goat, and one Sela's worth of weight being tied to the rock next to the cliff, at the edge of the cliff.
If you think about it, both these things, both these items for Sira Mishtaleach and the Paraduma, it's a function of length that you know there's a string for it. You need a certain length of tie. If I give you a whole bunch of cut snippets of the weight that they're requiring, you're not going to be able to.
For the Paraduma, I would only argue with you on one point, and I don't want to get into an argument. But I would only argue with you on one point, and that is about the Paraduma. It's not a function of length, it's a function of weight, meaning I just needed to get into the fire.
And to tie everything together.
Okay. Fine, that's fair. Okay. Vishal Seir, Mishalech, Mishkal Shnei Salaim, Vishal Mitzorah, Mishkal Shekel. And when it comes to the Mitzorah, so there's no COVID requirement, there's no weight requirement, and I'm not dividing into two. So when it comes to the Mitzorah, so it's just Mishkal Shekel Echad, so it's just the weight of one shekel. Fine. So Ravin comes in from Eretz Yisrael and is able to now attach a weight to each one of the three wools mentioned in the Torah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Pliga bar Rabbi Shimon Mechalafta Rabbana Bepara. There's a debate between Amarayim regarding the Parah Aduma. Chanamar Mishkal Asar v'chanamar Mishkal Shekel. So one says that it's the weight of 10 zuz, and the other one says, no, it's only the weight of a shekel. V'simancha echad amar bevechad amamit. And how are you going to remember that? Echad amar bevechad amamit. That's a Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, right? Rosh Hashanah?
Menachos.
Correct, sorry. Okay, because I'm going on the Ovavashi Yechav and Libel Shamayim. That's how my head got us to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, anyway, you don't have to follow my thinking. But the idea over here is Rashi explains what's a simon, meaning how is this mnemonic going to help us? Because as we just got done learning, so there are three weight measurements. There's either 10 zuz, which is the highest, or there's two shkalim, which is only 8 zuz, or there's one shekel, which is 4 zuz. So in other words, our Our minimum is 4. Our maximum is 10. So over here, in this debate regarding the weight of the weight of the wool for the Parah Aduma, so in this particular debate, we went with the minimum, we went with the maximum. Minimum 4, maximum 10, fine. That's just a way of helping us remember this particular version of the debate. Amalei Rav Yirmi, Medifta L'Ravina, Lo B'Parah Pligi, Ela B'Sira Meshaleich Pligi. So they said, look, you're almost right. Yes, there's a machlokus. And yes, the machlokus takes us from the high end of tenzuz. In other words, that's how much wool you need. And yes, there's a machlokus. And the other end of the machlokus is 4 zuz. So far, so good. You almost got it. But what you missed up on is what they were arguing about. They were not arguing about the Parah Aduma. They were arguing about the Sira Meshtaleach. Fine. Pligi. Now, the Ahu Yuma. And the Gemara continues, and he says, "Nach nafshe deravya barkisi." Now it happens to be that on that very day, in which not only was there a debate regarding weight, but there was a debate regarding what we're talking about, meaning the topic which we're discussing, the wool of the Parah Aduma or the wool of the Sira Meshtaleach. So on that very day, Ravya barkisi dies. Va'anchu beisimana, and they said, "Oh, it's a simon." Meaning the death of a tzaddik, death of a tzaddik is not arbitrary. Death of a tzaddik is a siman, and it's a siman that we are right. Well, why? Why should that be a siman that we're right? So I'm sorry. Siman Rav Yabarkisi mechaper kisir mishtalech, because we know Rashi brings down the death of tzaddikim or mechaper. So the which one presents more of a kapara, the Parah Aduma or the sir mishtalech? Now, if this question sounds familiar, that's because we addressed this question in the very beginning of the Masechta, meaning when we were discussing which one is a kapara. So we noted at the time that the Parah Aduma could be viewed as a kapara. Why? Because we know the Parah Aduma was, Rashi brings it down, the beginning of Parshas Chukas. The Parah Aduma serves as a kapara, as an atonement for which sin? The eagle, right? Let the mother come and clean up the mess of her child. So in that, and Rashi brings down, in that mashal, the mother is a Parah Aduma, the child is the Egel HaZahav, so Bnei Yisrael brought the Egel HaZahav, so what serves to atone it? The Parah Aduma. So yes, you could view the Parah Aduma as a kapara.
Why do you have multiple times though?
What?
Because you have to do Parah Aduma many times.
Right, in other words, right, well, you also remember, we discussed earlier in the Masechta, according to one opinion, and I don't have now total clarity on the Gemara, but we discussed how the Parah of Moshe Rabbeinu continued even through all subsequent generations. So each one is really just a continuation of the Parah Aduma of Moshe Rabbeinu. Anyway, you could view it that way, but if you remember, we said earlier, but really the Parah Aduma, its chief goal, meaning not in terms of why it was instituted or why the Torah demanded it. I mean, the Torah demanded it because the Torah demanded it. I mean, we can only go so far to understand why the Torah demanded it. But in terms of its chief goal, what does it accomplish? Tahara. It accomplishes purification. As opposed to the Sira Meshtaleach, what's its chief goal? Kapara, atonement. So therefore, when they're debating, in other words, we have a machlokus in the Beis Medrash, and we're arguing in terms of the red wool. And now we're arguing the red wool of what? The Parah Aduma or the Sira Meshtaleach? And on that very day, Ravya Barkisi, who was a tzaddik, so he dies. So it's a siman. It's a sign from God that it should be going on the Sira Meshtaleach, which is there to pose more as which serves more as a kapara, not as tahara.
You also need Parah Aduma to prepare the Kohen Gadol for the service of
right. Correct.
Tool for the
right
fire purpose.
Correct. I'm right. Okay, fine. That's the. And that's the end of the red wool discussion. Okay, so a big part of today's daf, the red wool. Again, it comes in because of the red wool used for the Sira Meshtaleach. So, and what have we concluded so far today? The Sira Meshtaleach is going to be tied with red wool around its head. It does need a certain amount, and the reason why it needs a certain amount is because it will be divided when gone to the edge of the cliff. Half of it will be ripped off, tied to the rock at the edge of the cliff, so that when the goat is thrown off the cliff, we're going to hopefully see the red wool turn into white. Okay?
In our sport, it's interesting. So Safa explains that why Yochanan didn't say the fourth one, only 3, and that's the basis for Rambam.
He defends the Rambam there. Right, so as I mentioned, the Rambam doesn't talk about the red wool tied around the neck of the goat.
Did they actually do that or not?
It's a good question. I just, correct. We'll see. We will see. It's something to look forward to. In other words, now we know, right? When we see the base of Mikdash, Mimher B'Yameinu, so we're gonna look for the red wool around the neck of the Sir Lasham, and then if we don't see it, the Rambam's right. In other words, because when he died, so we know the death of tzaddik and mechaper, it serves to atone. That's one of the accomplishments of the death of the tzaddik. So that, and the seer mishalech has the same goal, and the seer mishalech also is there to atone. So that's how we know that when he died. So we're talking about the seer mishalech because they both serve the same purpose. Okay, and that's part A of today's daf. And now we move to the second part of today's daf. Second part of today's daf now is going to be discussing the following. There's para and there's paro. Now I know we just started Sefer Shmos, and so I could be talking about the king of Egypt, and I'm not. Para is a paraduma. Okay, paro is without the ayin and without the hay. Paro means the bull of the Kohen Gadol. Okay, on Yom Kippur, one of the karbanos that are brought on Yom Kippur is paro. We just got done finishing that the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is going to use it as a karban chatas. He does vidui over his bull. He does a vidui twice. Once before the selection process of the seer, and once after the selection of the process of the seer. The one before is for a vidui for him and his family. And the second time, as we just learned in today's daf, is for all the vidui for all the kohanim. Good. That's paro. And why do we keep referring to it as paro? As his bull? So the basic reason why is because he pays for it. Meaning this, the funds that are generated for the purchase of the bull does not come from public money, but he paid for it on his own. Because it's his chatas. It's not for Klal Yisrael, it's his. Now granted, it also is going to serve for the other Kohanim as well, but he's the representative, meaning he's the Kohen Gadol. Fine. And para, that's paraduma. Okay. The question on the table is going to be really easy and really simple. The answer is not. But the question is going to be easy. Do I need a Kohen Shechting both? Do I need a Kohen Shechting either one of them? Now, by the para, let's just speak it out for a moment, and then we'll see all this inside in the Gemara. Now, by the para Duma, you can construct an argument really easy, I don't need a Kohen. And then you can construct an argument pretty easy that I do need a Kohen. Let's start with I don't need a Kohen. Para Duma, is it a carbon? No. We're not shechting in the base of Mikdash. It's not shechted outside the Azara. Don't you dare call it a carbon. You call it a carbon. So what are we doing then? We're shechute chutz. We're shechting a carbon outside the base of Mikdash. So it's hard to call it a carbon. So it's not really a carbon. So okay. So maybe if it's a carbon, maybe I require a Kohen. Although we know that's not true. But in other words, it's not even a carbon. So why would I need a Kohen? Aside from the fact that the Torah says so, but. and that's not an unimportant detail, but in other words, but just in terms of thinking about it, in other words, it's not a carbon. Okay, so that would be somewhat of an argument to say no. The argument to say yes, well, I just gave it away. In other words, the Torah, when describing the shechting of the paraduma, so the Torah says that you have a kohen involved, although the Torah doesn't exactly say that, and we'll see that in just a moment. That's paraduma. Now let's think about paroshel kohen gadol. There, it's hard to construct an argument that who's going to shecht it other than the Kohen Gadol. Meaning, isn't the Kohen Gadol involved in every activity in Yom Kippur, in the base of Mikdash? So there, to even suggest an argument, well, I don't really need a Kohen to shecht the parosh shel Kohen Gadol. It's the Kohen Gadol's par. So even to entertain this idea, it's a funny idea to entertain, but the Gemara will. So our discussion over the course of the rest of this morning, and this discussion will spill into tomorrow's daf, is do I need a Kohen to shecht the paraduma, and do I need a Kohen to shecht paro shel Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, shtei shechitos shemati. Now what's the transition? So hopefully you see it already. Meaning how are we transitioning from the red wool talk to the who shechts talk? So it's based on the statement of Rav Yitzchak. I mean, if you go back to the beginning of today's daf, go back to the bottom of Mem Alpha Amud Beis, Amar Rav Yitzchak Shtei Lashono Shamati. Right? I heard about two red bulls in the Torah. And so now, Right, you see the segue? Amar Rav Yitzchak Shtei Shchitos Shamati. I heard about two Shchitos. That's the segue between the previous discussion and this discussion. Achash HaPar v'Achash HaParo. One is the Paro, meaning Paraduma. Paro, Paro Shal Kohen Gadol, Yom Kippur. Achash Kshir Bazar v'Achash Psul Bazar. One a Kohen can shecht. One a Kohen has to shecht. One a non-Kohen can shecht. V'lo yadana haminayu. Here's my problem. My problem is I don't know. I don't know which one's which. So, meaning I don't know which one to assign the necessity of a Kohen and which one does not require a Kohen. Itmar, the Gemara presents.
I'm talking about Yom Kippur and not Yom Kippur.
What? What do you mean? Paro Duma is any day of the year. Mm-hmm. And Paro is specifically on Yom Kippur.
It has to be Yom Kippur, so it's got to be the
Kohen Gadol. So good. So in my introduction, I pointed out. It's hard to envision otherwise. Good. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss. Coming up, right now. So, Itmar, Shchitas Paro, Paro, Rav Ushmuel. So the Gemara notes that this is exactly a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. Chanamar Paro Psula, Paro Kshera, V'chanamar Paro Psula, Paro Kshera. Okay, so Rav and Shmuel, I mean, look, you can only have two permutations. So Rav and Shmuel basically each one take one permutation. Now, which one says which? So the way the Gemara presents it right now, we don't know. Gemara says, let's figure it out. Tis time to Rav Udamar Paro Psula. So let's say like this, that for Rav, we're going to suggest that for the Paro Aduma, it has to be a Kohen. For the Paro Shel Kohen Gadol, doesn't have to be a Kohen. I know it's counterintuitive, but the Gemara is going to explain. Damar Azera Shchitas Para Bizar Psula. The terms of the Para Aduma can be done by non Kohen. The Amar Rav Allah. Now Rav says, why? Now Rav is explaining why it is that the Para Aduma has to be a Kohen. Because when the Torah describes the Para Aduma in Parshas Chukas, the Torah uses words like Elazar. He's a Kohen Gadol. I mean, he's a Kohen. Right. Soon to be a Kohen Gadol, but okay. Elazar and Chukah. Chukah, what does the word Chukah mean? This is the way it has to be done, Chok. Meaning there cannot be any deviation from the way the Torah describes. So you put those two together. Now, granted, by the way, we're taking snippets of words, but words like Elazar and words like Chukah, so those indicate that Elazar has to do it to the exclusion of any other Kohen. Sorry. Let me say that again. To the exclusion of a non-Kohen. Fine. Shaninuba. That was taught over there. So this is Rav explaining why, when it comes to the Paraduma, has to be a Kohen, because of the words of Elazar and Chukah that tell us that when it comes to the Paraduma, for future Paradumas, has to be a Kohen.
If you're being that specific with the word Chok, why not just say only a living, no other person, not even...
Well, I mean, if Elazar lived indefinitely, so then the argument would be fair, but I think there's a certain understanding that when we say Elazar, he's a representative, not the person himself. But okay, fair. V'rav maishna para, so the Gemara says, okay, but fine. I hear that argument by paraduma, d'chsiv Elazar v'chuka, paranami haksiv Aaron v'chuka. Okay, but we could also do the same code, the same word match when it comes to Yom Kippur. Meaning, go to Parshas Acharimos, and you're going to see words used that are like Aharon and like Chukah. So just like you concluded by the Paraduma, it's got to be a Kohen. Well, can't you arrive at the same conclusion regarding Avodas Yom Kippur? It's got to be a Kohen. So the Gemara's answer is, the Gemara deflects. The Gemara says, Shchita lav Avodahi. Well, Shchita's not an Avoda. Meaning, yes, you're right. On Yom Kippur, Avoda has to be done by the Kohen Gadol. I'll give you that. We have Aharon, we have Chukah. So a vote has to be done by a Kohen Gadol. But not Shchita. Shchita is not an avoda. Shchita is a non-avoda. Right? We've said this many times. Yes. It's the non-avoda avoda, Shchita. So therefore, I'm with you that all the avodas have to be done by a Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur, but Shchita is not an avoda. Now, why isn't Shchita an avoda? It's a major discussion, major debate. We see this recurring a number of times throughout Shas. So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, why Shchita na Navoda? So is it Rashi here, or is it Rashi elsewhere? It's Rashi elsewhere. Okay, fine, but it's fine. Let's take a look at Tosfos. Second Tosfos on the Amud. So Tosfos says, v'chol duchta perish Rashi mishim dekshera bizar. You know why Shchita is not Navoda? Because a non-Kohen can do it. in our discussion now, it's like a circular logic. Meaning, you know why a non-Kohen can do it? Because Shechita is not a vod. You know why Shechita is not a vod? Because a non-Kohen can do it. And you know, you get into that loop. Okay, but anyways, that's fine. So, in our discussion, it's a little bit circular in logic, but still, the point is that on Yom Kippur, when we're talking about Shechting, the parashal Kohen Gadol, you know why it could be done by non-Kohen? Because it's Shechita, and Shechita is not a vod. Fine. That's how Rashi understands it. Tosus argues, Tosus challenges, but anyway, Tosus gives a different shot. Do you know why Shechita is not a vod? This is Tosus quoting, let me give correct attribution, Rabbi Yaakov Meir Orleans, right, the original Orleans, right, not the new one. So Rav Yaakov Meir Orleans, so he says, you know why Shechita is not a vod? He says, because we do Shechita with non-karbanos, meaning we do Shechita nowadays, right? It's, you know, it's called dinner tonight, hopefully. So the Shechita is not a vod because it's done by Chulin. That's why it's not an avoda. Okay, and right, obviously this machlokes between Rashi and the Balei HaTosfos extends and it goes on, but just know, in other words, from a Daf Yomi perspective, just know the Rashi Prakim, that why the Gemara refers to Shechita as being a non-avoda, so it's a machlokes between, we'll say it right now, it's a machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos, in terms of whether it's because it can be done by non-Kohen, or because it can be done, and it is done, with non-Karbanos. Fine. Either way, Shechita is non-avoda. That's why when it comes to Paro Shel Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, oddly enough, even though it's Yom Kippur, and even though the Kohen Gadol usually generally does all the Avodah Yom Kippur, but he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to do Shechita. Shechita can be done by a non-Kohen. And the reason why is because it's not an Avodah. Back to the Gemara. I'm sorry, Shechita lav Avodi. Ihachi Parinami. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear that, but now let's go back to Paro Aduma. Can't you make the same argument by Paro Aduma? So the Gemara says, Shani Paro Dekashe Benekabaisi. The Gemara says, no, you know, Paro Aduma, it's not a carbon. Meaning, we're not shechting a carbon when it comes to Paro Aduma. Yes, we're doing the process of killing the animal. But that's not Shechita. In fact, it's not even a carbon. It doesn't even have Kedusha Saguf. It doesn't even have intrinsic Kedusha. It's Kache Benekabais. Kachay Bedek Bais, meaning it's property of the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not a karban. So the Gemara says, V'chol lav kol tekein hu, okay, but fine, but let's now construct an argument. Amar Rav Shisha Bered Rav Idi, I'm sorry, the Gemara doesn't spell out the argument, so let's do it. I mean, Rashi does it, I'm just saying over Rashi, but let's construct the argument. What's the argument that really should have a Kohen, a non-Kohen Shech the Paraduma? Look, if by a karban, with Kedusha Saguf, I don't need a Kohen. So Para Aduma, which doesn't even have Kedusha Saguf, so for sure I don't need a Kohen. Meaning, why would you think I need a Kohen for that? That's the argument. I'm Rav Shisha, Breda Rav Idi, Midedahav, Amras Negayim, Dalav Avodihi, Ubay Kahuna. So the Gemara says, yeah, but to counter that, we'll say like this. Maros Negayim. Okay? I have a tzaras either on me, on my clothing, or on my house. What do? I call my local kohen. Please come over. I need you to look at Negayim. So you call the kohen who is fluent and has a degree in looking at Negayim. And he comes into your house and he looks. Now, can I get a non-kohen to do it?
No.
Torah demands they have to get a kohen. Now, is that an avoda? It's not an avoda. Meaning it's just a job relegated to the kohanim. The Torah assigns that this is a job done by the Kohanim, period. So, granted it's not an avoda, but the Torah demands that a Kohen has to do it. When it comes to Paro Aduma, we're going to say the same exact thing. In fact, now it makes the argument even better. Meaning, the Paro Aduma is not an avoda. It's not a carbon. If it were carbon, if it were an avoda, so then I'll give it to you. Have a non-Kohen shecht, because Shechita is not part of the avoda process. But when it comes to Paro Aduma, the whole process is not Kachim. It's not a carbon. And when the Torah is demanding that a Kohen do it, it's no different than a Kohen looking at Tzaras. Meaning, for whatever reason, the Torah demands the Kohen has to be involved in that particular action. Here too, because we're not in the world of carbon and Shechita lav avodehi, because we're not in that entire Parsha, but rather we're just simply in the Parsha Paraduma, so therefore the Torah simply demands, hey, in terms of Shechita, has to be a Kohen.
Can a Balmum Kohen do these?
Right, correct. That's it's reasonable. I don't know. But that's now in the context of this discussion, that becomes now a reasonable question, meaning the Torah's demand is just simply it's a kohen. Not in the avoda context, just simply we want a kohen to do it. So the Gemara says, fine. So now we defend the position of Rav. So what does Rav say? That when it comes to the paraduma, it has to be a kohen. When it comes to paro shel kohen gadol, it doesn't have to be a kohen, oddly enough, ironically enough. And the reason why is because in the Beis HaMikdash, shechting a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash does not require a kohen, period. That's all for Rav. Now the Gemara turns its attention to Shmuel, and now let's see if we could defend Shmuel. So Shmuel says just the opposite. The paro aduma can be done by non-kohen. The paro shel kohen gadol has to be done by a kohen. So maishna ule Shmuel damar paro psula maishna paro dechsev aron v'chuka. So in terms of paro on Yom Kippur by the kohen gadol, so there you look at the key words in the Torah, aron, chuka. So the Gemara says paronami dechsev alazer v'chuka. So the Gemara says, okay, but Parah Aduma, it also says Allah's in Chuka. Shani Hasan Dechsiv V'Shachad Oso Lifanav. Now we turn to the Parsha of Chukas, and we look specifically at how the Torah describes shechting the Parah Aduma. Let's read the words carefully. V'Shachad Oso, you shecht it, meaning the animal, the cow, Lifanav, in front of the Kohen. Oh, now that we actually see the pasuk inside,
Someone else is doing it.
Meaning it's not Aaron. Aaron is supervising. Now, it could be a Kohen, but that's not our question. Our question is, does it have to be a Kohen?
Could it be a Kohen doing it from a Kohen Gadol?
Again, you're right, but all you're going to say is it could be. Right? What we're arguing is it has to be. So what Shmuel's deflecting now, and Shmuel's saying, look, doesn't it have to be? I'll tell you what it has to be. It has to be done in front of Elazar.
There is no difference in terms of acting a passive verb for Shachat. That it should be in front of it.
No, shachat means it's a verb. It's an active verb. Someone's doing the shechita. But who? Torah doesn't say. Torah just simply says lifanav, in front of.
So if it's in front, it should be a slaughter in front of him. It should be a passive one, not a
okay, but
active.
The argument the Gemara is making right now in defense of Shmuel is just simply, we don't know. We don't know who's shechting. Could be anyone. So lifanav sheyezar shochet ve'alazir roeh. So now the scene we're going to paint is somebody shechting, doesn't have to be a kohen, and Elazar supervising. The Rav, now, let's go back to Rav. So now that we see the pasuk inside, so Rav, how are you going to defend yourself? Meaning, right, Shmuel's right. The Torah says, V'shachar so lifanav. Elazar's involvement is that of a supervisor, not the one who's doing it. So, V'rav, shalo yasich tatu mimenu. No, lifanav means as follows. No, Elazar's doing the shechita. The word lifanav means it has to be in front of him. Meaning that while he's shechting, he has to be cognizant and conscious of that which he's doing. No hesach hadas. So hesach hadas, Shmuel says, I agree, but I get that from a different pasuk. The Torah says in the burning of the paraduma, v'sarafata para le'enav, to his eyes. To his eyes. What does that mean? It means he has to be looking at it, focusing. Be conscientious of what's going on. And Rav says, look, your pasuk is great, but I need both pasukim. I need a pasuk by shechita and I need a pasuk by srefa. Look, by shechita, that's the beginning of the process. So there, focus, attention, kavana. But and if only I had the pasuk by the srefa, what's srefa? That's the goal. The goal is to reduce it to ashes. That's now what I want. The shechita, that was all heksher. That was all preparation work. So maybe the requirement of kavanah is only at the end, when I reduce it to ashes, not at the beginning. Gemara says, fine. That's why I need psukim both by the shechita and by the srefa. That's Rav's argument. Lemeute mai. Now, if I need kavanah when I shecht it, and I need kavanah when I burn it, when don't I need kavanah? When is it okay to just simply relax and, you know, daydream and think about other things? So are we talking about the collection of the paro? Are we talking about filling the water for the purposes of kiddush, for sanctification? That is the placement of the water on the ashes and mixing it together. So Lemishmeres lemeinidaksiv. So the Gemara says no. Top of membeis on the base, because the Torah says lemishmeres shmira. What does shmira mean? Guarding. Guarding in this context does not mean protecting it. Guarding it here means paying attention to it, right? Like matzah shmura, right? Paying attention to it. So ksiv el lamute ashlachas etzaros veizav v'shnitolatz alav gufa deparinenu. No, when I'm throwing in, it's coming to exclude when I'm throwing in. The throwing in of the cedar wood and the hyssop and the red wool, then it doesn't need absolute kavana, and there I can kind of daydream while I'm doing so. Right. Okay. Fine. Let's pause over here. This is a stopping point, not a great one, but it's a stopping point. Okay, we'll pause over here. So in terms of today, so we started the new Mishnah. The Lashon Shel Zoharis that's tied to the head of the Seir HaMishtaleach. The Gemara says we also tie to the neck of the Seir LaHashem. And then we talked about amount of red wool that we need vis-a-vis Paraduma, vis-a-vis Seir HaMishtaleach, and vis-a-vis also the Mitzorah. Okay, we talked about amounts, we debated amounts. We looked at the death of one of the tzaddikim as a siman, so the discussion. And then we moved on to today's daf membeis. Our big topic for today was, do I need a kohen? There are two times where a bull is shechted, paraduma and parashal kohen gadol. Do I need a kohen? So Rav Yitzchok says, for one of them I do, for one of them I don't. Which direction do we go? Machlok is between Rav and Shmuel. And we're right now in the middle of the machlok between Rav and Shmuel, when I do and when I don't need a kohen. Okay.